7 o'clock on a Saturday evening, which means it's time for the other podcast. And I'm not your host, Robert Stacy, because Stacy is on the road. We're hoping to hear from him in a little while. But for the time being, he is not with us. He is driving across the country, taking his daughter to college. So that's the last one of the McCain brood off to school. Meanwhile, I'm John Hoag, the other guy on the other podcast, sitting here in Studio B at Stately Hoag Manor instead of Stacy's dining table. And I hear in the background Diana.
Hello, hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm going to miss Stacy, but yeah. I'm glad that he is taking his last child to college. What a great thing to do.
Yeah. He now gets to have the experience of sort of kind of being empty nesters. But
they're five grandchildren. I don't think the nest is especially empty.
Not completely. But while Stacy is away, you get to fill in for him with all sorts of wonderful stuff. We're not going to start off with football. We're going to punt to other family raising of children issues.
Oh, yes.
Talk about Hunter for us.
Oh, you know, I read this headline and all I could do was laugh because it's so true. Gosh, I wonder why Hunter Biden is such a hopeless basket case of failure. And I read that and I said, oh, yeah, you got it. So I'm going to read this. I'm going to try to avoid doing too much drama because I know Stacy doesn't approve, but said no one ever. At least not after the past week, during which President Basket Case has demonstrated once and for all what a hopeless failure he is. To understand Joe Biden, you've got to begin by realizing how significant it is that he's a Northeastern Irish Catholic Democrat who grew up in a time and place where such people exercised a decisive influence in American political life. Biden was 17 years old when JFK was elected president, and the Kennedy clan, that big, sprawling Irish Catholic family, JFK's father being a wealthy banker who, the man was actually a booze runner, but okay. A wealthy banker who married into the most powerful political family in Boston was the kind of dynastic situation that today's elderly Democrats idealized in their youth. Anyway, the rest of the article is just, you know, deals with Joe Biden's ambitions and how they were thwarted by the passing of his older son, Beau. And now he's got the equivalent of Teddy Kennedy in the form of Hunter, and no way to cover for it. Not these days. The ability of the press to cover for JFK's philandering or Teddy Kennedy's substance abuse and womanizing, that sort of thing, to say nothing of near if not actual treason in the 1980s, it's gone. That doesn't exist anymore. And that was a point that it's beautifully made. Let me see. There's a perfect paragraph here. There is nothing authentic about Joe Biden. His entire life is a cheap ersatz copy, the political equivalent of a fake Gucci bag. And what kind of heir do we expect such a dynasty of phoniness to spawn?
Well, you know, the whole phony thing is, you know, he doesn't even plagiarize well.
I mean,
the whole thing he got into the first time he ran for president, stealing a speech from Neil Kinnock, who was the leader of the Labour Party in Britain at the time. Mm-hmm. Of course, then he hasn't even done a good job of plagiarizing helicopter landing on an embassy roof picture.
Ooh.
So it's
that was yeah.
He's you know. But, you know, Hunter is very definitely his father's son. I don't know that Biden ever was in. I think Stacey points this out. We don't know that Biden particularly had a substance abuse problem, but both of them have a problem with the truth.
Yeah, very definitely so. Well, I've always felt that Joe Biden is an extremely insecure man. He wants to be important. He wants to be respected. And of course, none of that is ever going to happen.
Well, I mean, you know, he has enough on the ball that he was able to sort of kind of stumble his way through law school. So, you know, he's got to have enough above average initial intelligence, forget about street smarts, but to understand just how far beneath the truly, you know, first-rate lawyers he really is. I mean, imagine a debate between Joe Biden and, well, let's pick somebody who's still alive, Justice Thomas.
Let's not.
I remember
2012, and I know that Paul Ryan is no longer in any kind of favor in any kind of, even in vaguely Republican circles. But Paul Ryan was there to discuss issues. I remember watching that debate, and Biden snorted and sneered and groaned and made noises throughout any answer that Ryan gave, and relentlessly attacked him in juvenile terms rather than ever answering an actual question. And
yeah,
somehow, I remember that in 2012. That was kind of unforgettable to me. If he couldn't even debate a, to be honest, mediocre intellect like Paul Ryan on... Paul Ryan's actually not a second-rate intellect. He just doesn't agree with me, therefore. But, yeah, he couldn't even begin to keep up with Paul Ryan. What does that say?
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, imagine, dealing with current other questions. Imagine posing the question to Biden, what is best in life?
Well, it certainly wouldn't be to crush your enemy, see him driven before you, and hear the lamentations of the women. Sorry.
Well, I think it would be whether it's mint chocolate chip or chocolate chip.
But I think that would be his thing. You're right. But I do love, I'm sorry, I always fall back on Arnie and Conan for when I say that, because that weird pause between, and hear the lamentations of the women, always has struck me extremely funny. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, anyway, on the other hand, Stacey has a post up that went up actually after we started putting together the outline for the podcast. What about living well?
Mm-hmm. Good news, bad news. The good news is, all Trump's enemies now look like utter fools. The best news is, it's because Biden has wrecked, or the bad news is, it's because Biden has wrecked American foreign policy and doomed thousands to death by the Taliban. Living well is the best revenge, except for rubbing your enemies' faces in it, in their shameful and irreparable failure.
Yeah, well, there's been a whole lot of failure going around among our elites, especially in the last week or so. But the last year and a half really has not gone well for them.
No. No, it has not.
And
between trying to somehow or other normalize and excuse the behavior of Antifa and portions of BLM to the sheer weirdness of accusing people of saying, hey, you know, the Wuhan Institute of Virology is right there where this outbreak of this illness came from. They told us that if we noticed that, we were weird, evil conspiracy theorists and probably racists. None of which is true, because now it's like, yeah, it probably came from the Institute of Virology. Sorry.
Well, yeah, but you see, the problem there is the narrative has to change. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into changing the narrative and when how history can be inconvenient a little bit further down the hour. If even lasts an hour, this is... The thing is, we can go on and on and on about stuff, but most of the week is Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Stacey did have one post, though, about the experts and elite that we have leading us right now, where he pointed out that his, I think it's third cousin twice removed, John McCain, was right about our current Secretary of State.
Yeah, yeah. Now, everyone who knows Stace, the headline of this was, John McCain was right? Everyone who knows me, and this is Stacey speaking, not me, knows I was not a fan of the distant relative I called Crazy Cousin John. The whole point of naming this blog the other McCain was to ensure nobody confused me with the Arizona senator, whose advocacy of amnesty for illegal aliens I abhorred. So it was interesting to see my late kinsman go viral this week. A recently resurfaced video showing late Senator John McCain warning colleagues of an unqualified and dangerous Anthony Blinken, who served as Deputy National Security Advisor under President Barack Obama at the time, specifically blasting Blinken's desire to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan. The nearly 2-minute clip, which comprises excerpts from December 2014, depicts McCain approaching the Senate floor to oppose Blinken's nomination as Deputy Secretary of State. Anyway, it's a great, great, great article, and it's a little longer than I think we can read right now, but here's the last para. Keep in mind that Senator McCain was referencing... I'm sorry, I'm reading a tiny, tiny screen here. Keep in mind what Senator McCain was referencing in Iraq, namely that the U.S. pullout had given rise to ISIS, which, in the wake of the 2011 Arab Spring, was setting up its caliphate in Syria. However much we may deplore the imperialism of the United States trying to impose its will in Mesopotamia and the Levant by force of arms, pragmatism is a better guide than ideological abstractions. The crazy zigzagging of our foreign policy from Clinton to Bush to Obama to Trump to Biden must leave our allies dismayed and our enemies emboldened. It's a very, very good article.
It is. And Stacey gets to the right around the edge of what's really going on here in terms of what's been ruining our military for the last 20 years.
Yes.
Actually, probably things really started to, the wheels started to come off in 1947 when they decided that the War Department was the Department of Defense.
Right.
And we haven't really won a significant war since then.
We haven't tried to.
We've been able to defeat such huge enemies as Panama and Grenada.
Mm-hmm. And also, we blew through in 1990, we blew through Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, but we didn't take him out. We didn't win the war. We didn't. We left him in position. We evicted him from Kuwait.
It was a punitive expedition. It was not. We didn't engage in nation building.
That's the least bad fight we've been in. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it this way, but I blame Bush.
I think you're right.
There's no question that Biden owns the catastrophic nature of the retreat from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that he's going to ever dodge that. Mm-mm. But the failure of the whole shebang was predetermined when we got into it, or shortly thereafter, mm-hmm. when George W. Bush failed to either, he needed to do one of two things. He either needed to limit it to a punitive expedition like we had against the Mexican bandits in 1916, right? Mm-hmm. Pancho Villa.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or you need to conduct a successful war of total destruction of the enemy. And we haven't had a lot of problem out of the Japanese since 1945.
No, we have not. And to be honest, I think that I agree with you entirely. Nation building, you have to actually destroy the structure first and the that you don't like first. And I'm not even sure that we're willing to do that.
We did do it to a very great extent in Japan. And we destroyed a big piece of German culture.
Yes, we did, but we had to help with that because they divided Germany. Remember?
Yes, yes, but I mean that's what allowed us to do what we did, and it allowed the Russians to build a different society on the other side of the fence there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, true.
But you know, one of the books I had to read during my training as a soldier was The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now this is like 2,000 years plus old.
We've got four translations on our shelf, and I brought three of them to the house.
I have it as a book on my iPhone and my iPad. All right,
mm-hmm.
It's something that I refer to that often.
Yes.
And one of the things that one of his basic principles is what is essential in war is victory, mm-hmm. not prolonged operations. And
correct.
20 years without victory really kind of comes under that thing.
Yep.
And meanwhile, we still haven't retreated from Chicago.
And we should have. If the casualty count is the only reason that we are abandoning Afghanistan. This is Stacy's observation, not my own. On our worst year for us, for the United States in terms of losses in Afghanistan was 440 killed. Chicago has already surpassed that this year. We are abandoning Afghanistan. We have not had a death in Afghanistan since March of 2020. And yet we're not going to abandon Chicago, although perhaps we should.
Well, I mean, there are some arguments to be made both ways. I don't know that we can abandon it in the same sense that we can leave it on another continent someplace. But there are some arguments to be made about saying, guys, if that's what you want, stay inside the fence.
As long as we manage to put like the Field Museum, the aquarium, the Art Institute, and the Science Museum, provided we put those outside and somehow or other make it absolutely that area completely safe, sure, go ahead.
Well, I think what you could do is
in Chicago. Sorry.
You could fence in that area, from McCormick Place on up through there, through Navy Pier, and then reopen Miggs Field for helicopter rides in and out from the outside, and that might work. But
we're not gonna, nor should we.
No, but the thing is that. It's the same group of experts running that at a local level who want to be running. I mean, Rahm Emanuel was the mayor, and what was his job before that? White House Chief of Staff?
Staff, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and so why do we think that, things are going to be better? Because of that sort of stuff.
Well, they're not, obviously. I mean, this ideology has built up and enabled a crazed, lawless mindset that argues that essentially ideology rules, just like it did, especially at the beginning of the Soviet Union. Your class origin or your ethnic origin now or your sexual orientation now all determine your fate rather than your character. And it's madness. It's utter complete madness. And it's a kind of a mental illness. It's like enabling what was it you said when I talked to you some earlier?
It's like a very, very nice person doing all these wonderful things to help a friend or family member struggling with an addiction. And all these nice things turn out to be things that enable the problem and make it worse rather than actually, forcing the person to hit bottom and then have to take corrective action.
Well, yeah, or not.
Well, but that may be the reason, though, why Afghanistan has more of a future than Chicago. There are already people starting to fight back in the hinterlands against the Taliban. The Taliban are driven by a particular worldview, but within the context of that worldview, they're very realistic. Okay? They understand the uses of power and are willing to use it to achieve their ends.
Yes.
But I'm seeing all these posts on the interwebs the last week and a half, saying that the Taliban are going to drag Afghanistan back. Actually, I'm seeing as far as the 7th century, probably the real answer is the 15th century, which is when the local warlords began to coalesce into something like what we think of Afghanistan now. Actually, I don't think that they're going to wind up in the 15th century. I think that Afghanistan is going to wind up as one of the ugliest corners of the 21st century. There's too much modern technology there now. We just let the Taliban have all that biometric data that our Army and Marines had collected. It's going to be extreme. They've got 200 aircraft. They got 75,000 vehicles. They got $85 billion worth of small arms. I mean, Biden makes Fast and Furious look like small potatoes. Yes. No one in history has ever given that many assault rifles to criminals before.
Yeah, and some of these, and a lot of these are actually select fire.
Well, no, they're all, I mean, they're M4s and
yeah.
M16s.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, I was somehow or other had other thoughts, other things on my mind.
Well, I mean, yes, actually, some of the sniper versions are semi-auto only, right?
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
Well, actually, some of the snipers do have the fun switch enabled so that the guy can protect himself if he gets jumped. But
Sorry.
You've never heard
with the fun switch is just not a thought I'd ever had. Go ahead.
Well, I wasn't thinking of a Barrett. For example, there's some really nice H&K. Seven and 16s and 416s that you can put a full auto trigger group in.
Right.
But you know,
fun switch enabled, right? Okay.
But Badakhshan Province sits. It's a really narrow thing that goes up the Silk Road. It's got a border with China that's 50 or 60 miles long.
And the Chinese are licking their chops.
Oh, I expect
roads and belts.
Yeah, I expect the Chinese will begin an economic invasion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they'll wait till after Labor Day. But
really.
Well, full scale. Let the dust settle a little bit. But so far, the Chinese really, if you look at their economic imperialism for mostly in Africa, actually, but it's been less on the European model and more like the Ferengi.
Yeah, they indebt people. They indebt governments to them to an extent where essentially, if ever China calls its loans, they're bankrupt.
Right.
They belong to the Chinese.
Right. And so I expect the Afghans' unwillingness to be dominated by outsiders, which has kind of got a really long history.
Yeah, it's
going to cause the Chinese to be sucked into the same black hole that devoured the British and the Russians and us. The question will be as to whether it's economic warfare only, but it's going to be ugly.
Well, the Afghans are famous as traders as well as fighters. They have been a crossroads of the world, weirdly, considering where they are, forever.
But the thing. The Taliban doesn't have the roots in that part of Afghanistan, which
is interesting. While this is true, they are making the terrible mistake of thinking that by grabbing wives from that area, who do understand trade and for whom it is their lifeblood, that they're going to somehow dominate that area. I think it's going to be Franklin had to say about the British in Philadelphia. Philadelphia has conquered them.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, look, there have been successful warlords uniting big pieces of the country and occasionally the whole country, more or less, being under a king. But the last successful outsider who conquered Afghanistan and held it for more than a day and a half.
Alexander the Great.
No, Genghis Khan.
Okay.
Actually, the Khans actually held it for a couple of generations.
Temujin still has a terrible reputation all through that arc.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if the Chinese think that they can replicate the Mongol horde.
That'll be interesting. It does usually require pyramids of heads for that, but...
Oh, yeah. And genocide and moving in outside people to fill up the area. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's exactly what the Chinese are doing to the Uyghurs now and did to the Tibetans over a couple of generations.
Yep.
So, like I said, and guess where the Uyghurs are? Right up on the border with Afghanistan. So,
yes, they are.
And what I mean, the Chinese are capable of a kind of ugly brutality that even frightens the Russians.
And that takes a bit, considering the brutality of Russian history.
Well, you know, this is the anniversary of Trotsky's death, so.
It is indeed. I was wondering if anybody remembered but me.
Oh, yeah. Another reason not to visit Mexico City some days. But, you know, on the other hand, we went through the week for a while, and we talked about, you know, the Chinese is Ferengi. The Ferengis are mercantilists. Mm-hmm. Stacy and I, on the other hand, are capitalists. And Stacy has his nice yellow button on his mm-hmm. website, which if you click on it, you can donate to help support the other McCain. There's a tip jar at Hogwash where you can help support Hogwash. Either way, by the way, winds up taking you to PayPal to our appropriate accounts. And it also supports the podcast, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I have the Hogwash store that you can click on the link in the sidebar at Hogwash and find out about. And get all sorts of goodies, and I get a cut of the action there. Or you can shop using the Amazon links, both mm-hmm. blocks participate in the Amazon affiliate program. We get a cut of the action when you shop that way. But regardless, since we are capitalists, we would appreciate it if you would remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
That's true. And that helps pay for our vacations. And because I don't have a paid for vacation spot, mm-hmm. I can drive past Camp David, but they won't let me in.
And also, don't forget, we have one primary duty, and that is keeping Mrs. McCain happy.
This is true. And Mrs. McCain is indeed on the road with Stacy, taking their daughter to the freshman year of college. Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, though, last weekend, one of the roads I sometimes use in order to drive to Stacy's was closed because of a certain person being in residence at Camp David. It's a beautiful place. It's a great mm-hmm. place to go chill and hide.
Oh, yeah, I can believe it. It's just, he's the president. His chilling and hiding is becoming disturbing.
Well, at least he canceled his trip to Delaware today.
Are we sure about that?
He may have reinstated it, but the last time I looked, they had called a lid on all that. But, you know, things happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do know that the vice president is on the way to Vietnam and Singapore.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think we could persuade the South Vietnamese to keep her, or the Vietnamese to keep her, or maybe, I don't know.
Maybe. Well, I don't, she definitely would not fit in Singapore, I don't think.
No.
But, you know, the president did spend last weekend, apparently Camp David, because it has the communication facilities not quite on the par of the White House, but excellent communication facilities. And apparently people were trying to get his attention. He wasn't really trying to share a lot of his information. But as the week went by, thinking about what was going on, and I had a post up: past performance is no guarantee of future results, but it is the way to bet. And I had a little chart there. And it had rising crime, above average inflation, overseas military disaster, oil embargo, and hostage crisis. And the first three boxes were checked off. Mm. We'll see what happens to the other two and when. Meanwhile, we also had a bulletin early in the week that while we've always been at war with East Asia, we've never been at war in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And also, the chocolate ration will be increased from 30 grams to 20 grams next month.
Yay! Yeah, right. And we are supposed to cheer at that, right?
Yes. Meanwhile, as we went through...
Did you want to comment on that speech or both speeches, either speech?
Well, you know, I watched the first speech. I had a break in what was going on so that I didn't have to pay attention to a meeting on Teams or anything like that. And so I was doing paperwork, good old fashioned paperwork on paper with a pen. Mm-hmm. And so I clicked on YouTube and went to the White House feed and for the speech. And of course it was delayed. So I just left it running in the background. Eventually it came up and I listened to it and actually watched a little bit of it. And my complete review of that speech was his lips were moving.
I thought that was a very good summary. I've read a great many articles about that speech. Some hot takes about yesterday's fiasco. And, you know,
by the way, that's my review of yesterday's speech as well.
Mm-hmm.
His lips were moving.
Mm-hmm. Therefore, he was lying. Stacy had an article in which he talked about how he was gaslighting, how Biden is gaslighting or trying to gaslight the disaster. And it's not working.
You think?
It's not working at all. When even CNN has an honest moment and explains, excuse me, but you see that little thing going over the fence there? That's a baby.
Well, or when the NPR person in the press pool starts asking pointed questions and saying, but how does this jive with reality?
Ha, ha, ha. It doesn't. The thing is, I think that the White House staff or the puppet masters of the meat puppet were had it in their heads that they could give the media their marching orders and the media would promptly fall into line and try to make us all believe that unicorns are flying over Kabul airport and farting rainbows. I think that's what they thought they could get us to believe.
Or that and pooping Skittles. Don't forget that.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. Sorry.
Yes.
We're supposed to believe that this disaster, this debacle, this nightmare that we're watching right now, that you know, there are feeds from Afghanistan. People have stuff coming out all over the place about what's going on there right now. You can click on anything and see hell on earth. You can see people being beaten and shot and people hitting each other. People doing crazy things to try to get through the Taliban to the airport for all the good it's going to do them.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here. We'll go back, but you know, this gets us right to this post I had. Actually, I guess it was this morning about leaks in the memory hole.
Yes.
Too many of the wrong people have been caught up in the Afghanistan fiasco for the media to quietly go along with the Biden administration's attempts to censor and edit the news. Mm-hmm. Look, it's been a long war. You've had two generations of reporters go through there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've got very senior people, you know, who were there 15 years ago and other people there. You have reporters who were there whose children are now there. Mm-hmm. Okay. And during that long association with the war, those reporters spent time there and made friends with people among the Afghan people. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but reporters who haven't been there have got like college roommates or fraternity brothers or sorority sisters mm-hmm. who are there with the State Department or with NGOs or stuff like that, yes, or they have family members, kids, and there are too many personal connections, uh-huh, to real people who are in real trouble for those members of the media not to challenge the spin.
Yeah. And Stacy had in one of his art, in one of the pieces we'd already covered, the one about enemies and dancing on one's enemies, points out that via Instapundit, we'd been told essentially there's a lot of children of elites stuck in Afghanistan, and their parents are burning up the phone lines.
That's particularly true of Europeans, by the way.
Yes, yes. Well, imagine the I'm quoting Stacy. Imagine the pampered 20-something daughter of a French or Belgian bigwig with her degree in international relations doing some kind of NGO work for women's rights in Afghanistan, and then, quite suddenly, the Taliban swoop down out of the hills and she's forced into hiding while a horde of bearded, machine-gun-wielding fanatics take over whatever provincial hamlet she was working in. Yeah, you just picture that.
Well, welcome to the 15th century.
Yeah, well, the whole thing is these girls, these kids, they have no capability with this. They don't understand what they're doing. And I'm not, I don't have any Schadenfreude about this. I am sick. I don't think they understand how fast how trying to go into hiding isn't going to work, because they're asking people to put their lives before their own children's lives, and that ain't going to happen. They don't.
You think?
There's no way it can. The whole guest friendship thing that might a century ago have protected them has been broken down by half a century of warfare with extremely secularized people. It doesn't exist anymore. They're not gonna put their guest friendship with you ahead of their children and their livelihoods. They're going to betray you, no time flat. And it's going to be horrible.
Meanwhile, the spin is not being supported by the media. Nope. The Guardian has a post up, I guess it went up late yesterday, on the difference between the American and French government's versions of the minutes of a phone call between Biden and Macron. And Macron. And it's the White House. This is the quote from the British paper about the French lecturing us about moral behavior. The White House readout of a call between Biden and Emmanuel Macron on the crisis in Afghanistan leaves out an impassioned plea from the French president that the U.S. and its allies have a, quote, moral responsibility, unquote, to evacuate Afghan allies.
We do, but do you think this administration has the faintest concept of that?
The
ideologues running Joe Biden, pulling the strings on the meat puppet, don't care.
No, other to the extent that they might have someone they have a personal connection to, and then. You know, that will fit inside their conception of morality. Meanwhile, you know, ABC edited the interview that Stephanopoulos had. And you can understand that because there's some umming and aahing and some questions that, you know, don't work and that sort of stuff. And they had to cut it to fit their airtime. That makes sense. But they published the whole transcript. And the full version simply makes Biden look even less prepared to handle the crisis than the interview that did. So
he sounds like his brain is made of pudding.
No, I think it's chocolate chip. But look, people who haven't had their session in room 101 yet tend to be supportive in family and friends over the demands of the inner party. And that's what's going on, I think, with the with part of the media. There's another part of it where it's a struggle inside the inner party.
Oh yeah.
But you know, the inner party has a very interesting dilemma that they're going to have to deal with here. Yeah. You know, what really gets them where they want to be, or at least in a better spot than they are now, because they are in one hell of a mess mm-hmm. with Biden. And it, you know, he having him at the front of everything is not going to help them in the congressional elections.
Oh, God, no.
And they certainly don't want him running for re-election. look, he's a failed president.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, yeah, and it's only the seventh month, more or less.
Right. You can just take Afghanistan, like we've been beating to death this week, and that's mm-hmm. grounds for impeachment. Forget about the economy. Forget about flipping his middle finger at the Supreme Court and that sort of stuff. If he were a prime minister and this were parliamentary democracy, he would have either resigned or have lost a vote of no confidence and been and be sitting on one of the back benches. The problem the Democrats have is that the United States isn't a parliamentary democracy. It's a federal republic. It's a republic of the United States. And there's separate legislative and executive branches. And you can't just put him on the back bench and keep your majority, because he's not even a member of the legislature. If they depose him, Harris has to leave her role in the Senate to become president, which splits the Senate 50-50 again, giving the Republicans a veto on whoever she might nominate to VP.
Yeah, and so that's making broad assumptions. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I mean, yeah. Look, let you offer the VP slot to Collins. That still doesn't mean that she's going to vote with him. Mm-hmm. Basically, they've got to get everything that they want to get through mm-hmm. while Harris is still VP. And the overreach they're going to have to do that is not going to sit well with the voters. So they've got a problem there. What's going to be fun from my point of view, it's going to be potentially devastating for the country, but mm-hmm. I'm probably going to eat a lot of popcorn watching. Mm. Look, the various inter-party factions are going to spend the next few weeks and months in damage control mode, right? It's going to be a lot of infighting. The problem is going to be the collateral damage to America.
Yes.
But they're going to so weaken themselves that 2020 is not going to be a good year for the left.
I can't wait for the 20. Well, actually, I'm not sure, because I'm not sure about the margin of cheat anymore. But that's a different discussion and doesn't involve this week. It's going to be amusing though to watch the number of people who suddenly find themselves under the bus rather than riding it. Well, the first person who's going to find herself looking at the undercarriage is Harris.
But they got to keep her around for the Senate.
They'll have to keep her around in her role as VP for the Senate, but they can eviscerate her political future.
They
can make it utterly impossible for her to even contemplate running in 2024. And it wouldn't surprise me if, having had a rather closer acquaintance with Ms. Harris's style of weird conception of how governance works in San Francisco. The woman is flat out stupid and not competent. She's they're going to be able to exploit that to make her look really stupid, incompetent, and useless, except for that tie-breaking vote.
You know, I'm okay. I think she actually may be smarter than Joe Biden in terms of IQ or, you know, those sorts
She's
of measures.
She's not demented. That's about the only thing you can say for her.
Well, I'm talking about Harris in her 50s versus Biden in his 50s. She, in some ways, strikes me as having perhaps a better IQ to the extent that her thought processes are quick. And that's what high IQ means, is that you process rapidly. It doesn't mean that you process wisely. And what Harris is unwise. She has incredibly low street smarts as well. But she did find the right sugar daddies along the way. So there is that.
She did.
So, you know, it's not that she wasn't fortunate or lucky, but she has been more than Peter Principle. She has not only been promoted to her level of incompetence, she's been promoted above it.
Far above it.
But she's too critical now to be allowed to fail, at least at a certain level. But,
Democratic politics, everybody fails upwards. I mean, that's been painfully obvious, but I don't know. I disapprove of her deeply. Her behavior as the DA in San Francisco was disgraceful. It literally was utterly disgraceful. And if you're talking about San Francisco, that's a sad and very difficult bar to fall under.
It was even worse as AG for the state.
Oh, she was a nightmare.
Meanwhile, though, we've been assured by the White House communications director that the president never shies away from taking questions.
As long as they're about what his choice of ice cream flavor is, he loves those questions.
Yeah. Well, you know, but getting back to California.
Do we have to? Yes.
We've gotten to that point of the show where we're going to talk about crazy people who are dangerous.
Yes.
And of course, you could just say the whole damn state. But there was a mostly peaceful stabbing.
Yes.
That's just hard for me to read. A mostly peaceful stabbing at a demonstration in L.A. that Stacy wrote about.
Yes,
actually, he wrote about it on the last Sunday. So this occurred.
It qualifies.
Yeah, it qualifies. You know, a bunch of people were protesting against vaccine mandates.
Mandates. Yes.
And so Antifa shows up and starts a fight, and one of the guys in black knifes one of the protesters. Mm-hmm. And at least so far, there hasn't been an arrest made, but they're working on it. It's like, okay, we're going to have we're going to go out and protest what amounts to a fascist regulation. Mm-hmm. And so since we're protesting a fascist regulation, who shows up but Antifa?
Right.
The alleged anti-fascists.
They're the fascists. They are, in fact, the brown shirt enforcers of the party line, but they're too dumb to realize that.
Are they the brown shirts, which were the Nazis, which were a different bunch of socialists, or they're actually the black shirts of of the communists.
Well,
in Germany, I believe it was the black. I don't. Red didn't work, and
Germany
so I think
had the brown shirts. In Italy, the fascisti who were in the streets were the black shirts.
Yes, but I'm talking about Antifa had. I'm trying to think. I believe Antifa also wore black in Germany.
Yes, they did, but that was more like. It's not important. I've got a whole lecture on this, and nobody needs it. but really, yeah, this is a whole. That was more actually the anarchists, but the anarcho-syndicalists had a very brief alliance with the hard left people, Ruth Fischer's people, in Germany. It's not important. In any case, the big thing is that what you're seeing is that Antifa is acting as the street enforcement arm of the Democrat Party. They are the fascists, and they're too stupid to figure out that they are.
Yep, but they're dangerous, and crazy people are dangerous.
They're very dangerous.
Meanwhile,
they are indeed.
Meanwhile, we're getting up to the end of the hour, and Stacy is still on the road, but we've had a good time. At least I have.
I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for stopping by, Anna. We'll do this again next week, with or without Stacy.
All right.
We'll see you then. Good night, everybody.
All right. Night.
Mr. Breeze.